Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
What's up, my peeps? It's that time again. It's time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. And what a great show we have lined up for you today. Yeah, so much is going on in the world of sports. We've crowned another champion at the college level. There are some hiring and firing of head coaches all around the NFL. And folks, it's playoff football. You know we have to discuss it. And I discuss it with my quarterback, my guest, three-time Super Bowl champion, and an NFL Hall of Famer, Troy Aikman, joins the MIP. So let's jump right into this. When we get to this time of the year, peeps, everything is important. As I told you last week, everything is a big deal. So we're just going to talk about all the big deals. And the first big deal we got to touch on is that national championship game. Wow. Incredible, incredible game from this standpoint. Wasn't a close game. It was a David and Goliath. And Alabama again showed that their Goliath and David could not beat them. And they are monsters. They are monsters, man. Oh, Alabama, they are monsters. But before I narrow down to Alabama, I just want to give you some knowledge and some understanding on how all of this college stuff has been playing out. Nick Saban, who got his unprecedented 7th national title Monday night, he passed a man that really used to run Alabama and turned Alabama into what they are right now. That's Paul Bear Bryant. He was tied with Paul Bear Bryant at 6th, and he just went and got his 7th, and it was in an incredible form. There's a lot that went on around this game, but Nick Saban, I want to commend you first with a record of 151-15. There's a lot of ones and fives in there. I want to make sure y'all get that right. He's won 151 games. He's only lost 15. Excuse my language, but that is fucking insane. Are you joking? Are you joking? What he has down there is incredible. What he's doing is incredible. Man, listen, can you imagine this man had Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Waddle, Devontae Smith. All these boys were on the same football team. All of them will be high draft picks. All of them will make their mark in the NFL. He just continues to tool that thing and retool it and retool it. It's like he's building a farm down there. And I thought to myself, if you're Devontae Smith, who just took home every trophy known to mankind, Heisman, everything, why would you sit in back of someone and wait your turn? In a world where there's a transfer portal and people are taking people off those portals all day, where you've been given power back to the player, but yet you sit and you stay because you know you are at a special place and you are doing something special. Nick Saban said something the other day that piqued my interest. He said, these guys buy into the program. They buy into what we do here, and they do. He goes and get the top recruits, and he doesn't promise them you can play right away. Like all these other schools that get these young guys, they promise, I promise you can play right away. I promise you can play right away. We'll let you play. You come to the school. Nick's saying, hey, we got beast in waiting. You can come and prove you can earn the right to play, but you better understand we got beast in waiting. That's what they got. They got beast in waiting, man. Reminds me of my Miami days. But he's even taking it to another level because I don't see this thing ending anytime soon. Congratulations, Nick Saban. You are truly, truly at the top of the mountain, standing up there all by yourself with 7 national titles. That's insane, man. That's insane. 52-24. What a score. Around this game, there's been a lot of talk, and I want to hit on this because a lot of people have been talking about the Jaylen Waddle playing. He played in that game. He caught 3 passes for 34 yards. And even Landon Dickerson, the center who got hurt in the SEC championship game just December 19th with the ACL, got a chance to take some last second snaps. And it was a great story about Dickerson, and everybody kind of agreed with that. But a little mixed bag on Waddle, and I want to speak on that because I've heard and I've seen the tweets from all the guys praising his heart but kind of urging Nick to get him off the field. And I understand what those guys are like. I understand what Patrick Mahomes and all of those guys are saying and to a degree. Because we're on the outside looking in. We're not on the inside. We haven't been in those meetings with Waddle, his family, and Coach Saban. And what I've seen and what I've studied, what I've read, is that Coach Saban talked with his family, had a conversation with his family. Waddle was in that conversation. He was certainly in that meeting, and he wanted to play. They wanted him to play. He had been, like I told you, waiting behind Beast for his moment. And I love how every one of these classes, all they talk is championship. It's like that. It's their right. And if their class don't get it, then they let down everybody and everybody that ever had any association with Alabama. I just love what he's built here. It's insane. So I'm telling everybody, hey, I understand what you're saying. I was worried about the kids' well-being also, and it was hard to watch them sometimes on the football field. But they had an agreement between the two of them. We're on the outside looking in, and that's easy for us to make these comments about a Waddle shouldn't have been out there. I don't know the sacrifice that kid made. I could imagine how that kid and his family must have cried and said, this is what we've worked hard for. We waited all of these years. I want to be in that game if it's at all possible. He got hurt October 24th with a high ankle sprain. If it's at all possible, that game, you have to understand, had been the motivating factor to get him past all of those rehabs, all of those more early morning icing, stretching, everything to get that ankle back right. I have no problem, especially that he came out healthy and he's okay now with what Nick Saban did. As a matter of fact, I applaud it because this, you have to understand, will help Nick in his recruiting moving forward. He made a promise to those boys and he kept it. That'll go way farther than even some of the great pros that we have tweeting about it. Trust me, those kids know what Nick Saban did. Congratulations, Nick. Great job. Speaking of coaches, I want to turn this thing right to the Cowboys hiring of Dan Quinn. When I heard this for the defensive coordinator job, I was a little set back because I thought after what the Cowboys had gone through that they wanted somebody to walk in here with some great credibility. And Dan Quinn certainly has had some success. He's had some success with the Legion of Boom. He's had some successful defenses. He's had some success in Atlanta. But Dan Quinn got fired this year after an 0-5 start. I want to give you the Cowboys' numbers at the end of the season on defense. I want to give you Dan Quinn's and the Falcons' number. Let's just go to week 4 since he got fired week 5. And I want to compare these numbers, and you kind of get what I'm talking about. When we go total defense, the Cowboys were 26 at the end of the season. Dan Quinn had the Falcons week 4, number 31. Scoring defense, the Cowboys were 30th at the end of the season. Week 4, Dan Quinn had the Falcons last in the NFL. Rushing, the Cowboys were last. Week 4, Atlanta was 13. But passing, Atlanta was 31st. On third down, Cowboys 29th, Atlanta was 9th. Big plays, Cowboys were 28th. Atlanta was tied for 29th. What I'm saying here is I was hoping that somebody walked in with uber amount of credibility because of what the situation was this year for the Dallas Cowboys and all of the stuff that went back and forth in the locker room and guys not trusting and believing in the coaching. I thought you'd go bring in somebody with uber credibility. But, of course, that's not the situation. We'll talk to Troy Aikman about Dan Quinn. He knows more about him because he spends a lot of time talking to coaches prior to the game. And we'll see what he says. I'm just telling you, I thought that they would bring in someone that would have the ability to say something when he stands in front of that defense room and everybody buys in, no question asked, because they say, I know what that man did right there in the last place he was at. They won't be able to say that here. But we'll ask Troy if he's a good mover and teacher of men to see what happens here. The next coaching situation happened with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles fired head coach Doug Peterson after just 5 short years, and he just won the Super Bowl 3 years ago. I was shocked by this. And I think this clearly tells everyone that in this game, we value quarterbacks even over coaches, because that's what this came down to, the quarterback and the coach. One must go. And I know I got more money vested in the quarterback, so we took on and went on from the coach. I think this is a very sticky situation for the Philadelphia Eagles, because when you bring in the next coach, what do you tell him? Okay, you got to play Carson Wentz. And then what does he say to the rest of the locker room who's already out on Carson Wentz and saying, Jalen Hurts, our guy, we did some winning with him. Don't put us back in that. It's a tough situation for the Eagles, and I don't mind telling you, I don't feel sorry for them one bit. I'm sorry. I just don't feel sorry for you one bit. It's a tough world out here. It's a tough world, especially in this National Football League. It is what it is, man. That Bears watching. You know, Doug was in a tough situation too, because I always say, guys, I said this before, you can lose football games and get another job, but when you lose a locker room, it's hard to get another job. It is hard to get another job in the NFL because all these guys talk. Everybody communicate. And I'm anxious to see what happens when they bring in another guy that they're trying to say, listen, this guy has credibility, and then they force him to put Carson Wentz back on that football field with the rest of that team. I want to see what happened in that locker room. That's going to be worth watching. That's just the coaches stuff going on around here, man, national championship. But, boy, we had some great games last week. Oh, my God, man, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to the great games this week. And let's just break these things down. I just want to hit them right fast, if I may. And I'll go in this order. I'm going to Rams-Packers first. Did you see that game the Rams put down on Seattle? That defense was incredible. Incredible. I've never seen Russell Wilson look this bad. And I know the Rams have given Seattle a tough season this season. It was tough. The Rams played them tough, man. They got Aaron Donald up front, and they put Ramsey on Metcalf, and they had a hard season in Seattle against the Rams. In that game, they've held them to 20 points, 142 pass yards. They were 2 of 14 on third down. Seattle was 2 of 14 on third down, and they sacked them 5 times. Now the Rams get to go against the Packers. Let me tell you about the carryover for the Rams. If the Rams defense can show up like this, remember, Russell Wilson is mobile like Aaron Rodgers. He can move around. He can hit you early. He can make you pay late. He has a superstar receiver. Russell Wilson had DK Metcalf, just like Aaron Rodgers has Devontae Adams. You see what I'm saying? If that front line of the Rams can do to the Packers what they did to Seattle. And Jalen Ramsey can do to Devontae Adams what he did to Metcalf, especially over this season. Now, Metcalf had 5 receptions and 96 yards and a touchdown in the playoff game. 51 of those yards came on a scrambling touchdown play. So Jalen Ramsey played him pretty good again. And over the season, Jalen Ramsey really just dominated that matchup. He dominated that matchup. This matchup between him and Devontae Adams, it's about to be on and popping. Folks, don't you miss this? Don't you miss this? So funny. Deion Sanders called me this morning, man. I just love Deion, man. He's my boy, man. He called me this morning, and he called, and I'm bringing this, I don't know, I'm bringing it up because I was just thinking about these guys battling and how many times I had to battle, and I battled with Deion. But it's so funny, all the guys I battled with like that on the field, how close we've become off the football field. Like, you know, Daryl Green, we've had Daryl Green on the show here. Deion calls me this morning. He said, man, I just wanted to call you, man, coming out of my prayer closet and tell you how much I love you, man. And we started laughing. We're crying a little bit, too. I was crying. I ain't going to lie because, you know, I'm just getting old. And when guys like that call you out the blue and tell you they love you, it just kind of means stuff. I don't know. It means stuff. I was crying. And then we started laughing about some of the battles and how many times we fought. I told him, I remember about when I was out there acting a fool, getting caught in the hotels, doing crazy stuff. He came to my house, man, and he parked right in back of my garage. He said, hey, man. You gonna stop this mess right now, or we're about to fight in here. And I mean, we almost came to blows in that backyard. You know, I told him, I said, man, I'm sorry I was hard hit. You were dead right. He was dead right what he was saying. He was dead right. Everything he said to me, he was dead right. I just love him for it, and I love him for calling me. But I digress off what I was talking about. These great matchups. This Ramsey-Devontae Adams matchup reminds me of that Deion Sanders matchup. Ramsey's too much for Metcalf because he's a young guy right now. But Devontae Adams, this is a veteran. This is a veteran. And he don't beat you just with talent. He beats you with knowledge also. See, right now, Metcalf just trying to beat you with talent, trying to run by you and muscle you. Devontae Adams, he understands the game. Like a quarterback, he doesn't just try to out-talent you. He out-leverage you. He'll do many other things. That's going to be a telling matchup. If that front line for the Rams can get to Aaron Rodgers like they got to Russell Wilson, Ramsey on Devontae Adams, watch that game, y'all. I'm not calling it. I'm just telling you to watch that game. Let's go to that next game, that Ravens. In Bills, I think this is going to be one of the most interesting games of the weekend right here because the Ravens finally go get over that hump. Or should I say Lamar Jackson got over that hump? You know, darn well, Lamar Jackson could not lose another postseason game. We would have rained hell down upon his MVP trophy. Straight hell. Man, oh, yeah, your sweet feet. Oh, yeah, did all that. Oh, yeah, the MVP in the regular season. But what do you do in the playoffs? He didn't end in the playoffs. He ain't done nothing in the playoff. Would have rained hell down upon his head. And then it was Tennessee. Tennessee beat you again? They had to win that game. And they did. I ain't going to lie. I was nervous watching it at first, though. Tennessee came out, went right down the field. I said, oh, my God. And they looked physical. But the Ravens came back, man, with that one great run by Lamar Jackson up the middle of the field. If you slow that run down, man, I'm going to tell you something. You can see the guys that had the angle on Lamar. The angle. It was right there. I saw it, and then it was gone. You'll see the difference between speed and flat-out flying. Josh Allen has speed. He can run. Lamar Jackson can fly. Josh Allen can make a lot of plays with his legs. Lamar Jackson changed games with his legs. This game, as great as both of them are with their legs, will come down to their arms. It will come down to what kind of passes can you make. You got confidence in what Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs is going to do, what they are going to do. They've been doing it all year. What has to match it, Lamar Jackson, and Marquise Brown. Now get this. Marquise Brown, the other day, had a 100-yard game. His second 100-yard game of the season. He had a 100-yard game week one, and then a 100-yard game first playoff game this year. Last year, he had two 100-yard games. He had 100-yard game week one and a 100-yard game in the first playoff game last year. Marquise Brown had two this year, but if he wants to beat the Bills, he has to have his third. Stephon Diggs, because I'm going to say that Marquise Brown has to run rival and run with Diggs. Diggs had eight 100-yard games this season. Another three where he had over 90 yards. So he's going to be up over there right around 100 yards again. In order for the Ravens to come away with the win, Marquise Brown, you got to match that. All the running is one thing. You will have to match Diggs. Go on the field and be the best and match Diggs. Diggs got to do that against Peters. He's going to try to jump everything. And I'm going to tell you something. This may be the wrong time for Peters, Marcus Peters, to be jumping. Ain't no, there's nobody in the game that transitions better than Stephon Diggs. That means when he goes into a route, and he starts breaking down, getting ready to cut, and you jump that route, he transitions so quickly back to top speed to run right by you. I'm just saying, be careful with that. I got the Bills, I think, in this game, but the Ravens will have a chance if Marquise Brown really goes Hollywood and get down. They'll have a chance to maybe steal that game. The game that I'm so interested in watching, though, are the Browns versus the Chiefs. Y'all saw the Browns beat the Steelers. That was an insane game. Because I'm going to tell you why. And what I saw in that game gives them a chance against the Chiefs. I saw the Steelers. The Steelers come out and the Browns jumped all over them. Up 28. Just like that. And then the Browns started taking on injuries. Right? And I said, oh my God, losing offensive linemen left and right. And I saw the Steelers. I saw the momentum change to the Steelers as backup guys were coming in the game and getting rushes on Baker Mayfield and stopping the run. I said, uh-oh, this thing feels like it's about to change. But those backup guys stiffened their neck, and they started playing well. The backup to the backup on the offensive line started playing well because they didn't have a lot of guys out. They had guys out because of COVID. They had their own head coach out because of COVID. And these dudes stood up and played. I said, oh, my God. They're gaining respect right now. They're gaining respect. That's championship stuff right there. And you take that into Kansas City, that'll give you something. That'll give you something. Because you can run the ball. Cleveland can run the football and play takeaway. And then they have the ability to make plays in the pass game when they have to. That's what they did last week. Right? That when Pittsburgh came down and scored, Baker Mayfield took that ball, and he drove them right back and shut the door on that momentum bid. I said, wow, they can do this. They can do it. They'll have to play their perfect game, and the Chiefs will have to play not a perfect game, nowhere near their best game. But the Browns, if they do that, they'll have a chance. They'll have a little slim chance. It'll be a slim window of opportunity that you can close this door and try to get the Chiefs this weekend. It's going to be tough. I'm going to take the Chiefs to win that football game. But I'm telling you, don't sleep on the Browns. Do not sleep on those Browns. The big game this weekend will be the matchup between those two old beasts, 40 and over. My old guys. Drew Brees and Tom Brady, the Bucks at the Saints. Tom Brady, the only man over 40 to pass for 40-plus touchdowns in a season. What an incredible, incredible feat this man has done. Did you know these last four games he's played has been his best four ever? His numbers have been the best he's ever had in the history of his career, which blew my mind. No way is better than the 07 year, right? No way. They were undefeated. They ran the malls. They were killing people, but they are. Over the last 4 weeks, he averaged 399 yards per game with three touchdowns. In sane. So he was peaking at the right time. And let me tell you a little bit about this game, because I'm going to tell you something. We did it. I experienced it with the Cardinals. The Cardinals hadn't won a playoff game in – it almost hurt my mouth to say it – in 50 damn years. It was over 50 years. And we played them in 98. We had beaten them twice that season. We whooped them all the time. They were chumps to us. Every day we beat them down. Anytime we played them, we beat them down. When we got ready to play the Cardinals, we went in the game. We were on the plane headed to the game already writing in my stats. I'm going to have 13 for 188 and two touchdowns. It's the Cardinals, damn it. That's what we were doing. That's what we were doing. And we beat them all season. And then we got in the playoffs. And somehow, some way, you can't turn your mind off and say, well, you didn't beat them twice already. We got to be ready. Got to be on edge. You say all of that stuff. But somewhere deep in your spirit, you still say, we beat you twice already. It's hard to beat a team three times. And I think that's going to make way in that Bucks versus Saints game. That is hard to beat a team three times. And this one last little caveat. Antonio Brown is now in town. Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore. Marshawn Lattimore, he has good games against Mike Evans. And I think it's been the difference between why the Bucks can't get over the hump with the Saints. But now that Antonio Brown is there, when you take down that number one option and Mike Evans, Antonio Brown becomes the number one option. And he hurts you just as much. I'm leaning towards the Bucks in this game. And I'm examining myself to make sure it's my head that's making these decisions, my brain making these decisions, not my heart. Because I love seeing Tom Brady continue to strike down goals that he wanted to accomplish, to strike down things that people said he couldn't do, to strike down all the naysayers. And I wouldn't mind seeing him strike down that thing that says a team never gets to play a Super Bowl in their own home stadium. Look how the stars are aligning for that star named Tom Brady. But first, he must get past that star named Drew Brees. Speaking of great quarterbacking, let's ask my quarterback about quarterbacking in the NFL. Troy Aikman, next. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. Joining the MIP is my main man right here. This is just an incredible dude and an incredible football player. And when you're starting to get ready to talk to someone like we're talking here, Troy, you know, you go through everything that they've accomplished, right? Getting ready to do an intro, man. And when I look at this, this is insane. This is insane. When you talk about your college and your pro career, how blessed you've been, you know, in college, Troy, your consensus All-American, 1985 national champion, Heisman Trophy finalist, made College Hall of Fame. They retired your jersey. Then you get to the pros. You're a 6-time Pro Bowler, 3-time Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP, Cowboys Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame, and probably the one you're most proud of is the Walter Payton Man of the Year. That's my man right there. That's Troy Aikman. All of this, Troy. That's a hell of a journey, man.
Yeah, no, it's been blessed. You know, we all have been. And, you know, I know that I always tell the story back when I was seven, 8 years old, my father used to always ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I never remember answering it other than saying, I want to be a professional athlete. And, you know, a lot of kids have dreams and not many ultimately get to live out those dreams. And so to be able to do that, I know you've been able to do that as well. It's a real blessing. And I think sometimes it takes coming on a podcast with you to be reminded of that, you know, how blessed we all are.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because I was going to my workout this morning, man, and Dion called me out of the blue, you know, and he was just calling and he was just sharing with me what, how things are going for him. And he said, man, I just want to tell you, I love you, man. And I appreciate you, man. I miss our time. And Roy, I almost start crying on my way to work just to hearing that. As you get older, it's just what you're saying. You don't think about these things when you're 24, 25.
Good question.
And, you know, but when you get those phone calls now, they mean a great deal, man. So you know, and even when you text me or something, when I get that text from you or a call from you or I'm listening to you do your games, man, I'm like, oh, man, that's my boy, man. It means something. It just means something, man. So yeah, you're great at what you do. Troy, I tell me, how did you first know that you would be doing what you're doing right now on air broadcasting?
Yeah, you know, it's funny kind of how it came about, Mike. We were still playing, and it was 1998, and we were flying back from a game, and Del Hellestray and I were sitting next to each other, and he had gone over to Europe and had done some games for NFL Europe, and I had been asked to do it a number of times. I just really had no interest in it. I always tell people that in our locker room, we always knew that you would go into television, always knew that Dion would go into television, but that was kind of where it ended.
Right. And
so Brad Sham came up and was talking to us, and he was talking to Dale about NFL Europe. And I said, Brad, you should go over there and try TV sometime. And he said, well, I'd love to do it, but you know, they've never asked me to come. And I said, well, they've been asking me to go over there for a couple of years. How about if I tell them I'll go, but only if you can be my play-by-play guy. And they said, great. And so I asked Fox and they were all for it. And Brad and I went over and I thought, well, I'll just get a couple weeks in Europe and then Brad can do some TV and I'll see whether or not I like it. And I really enjoyed it. And it was the first time that I thought, well, maybe this is something I might do when I retire. And I got a call from Ed Gorin, who was with Fox at the time. And
great man, great man.
Great man. And he said, Troy, whenever you retire, we've got a job for you at Fox. And so that was the first time it really entered my mind. And then 2 years later, I was retiring. And of course, I took the job. And I really, even then, Mike, thought that I'd do it for a couple years until I really figured out what I wanted to do with myself. And it just has been such a great job and being with family and having the off seasons. I mean, it is the best job I think there is in the country that affords you to stay involved in something you really love and yet still have the flexibility and the time to be with family and young kids while they're being raised. And so here I am. This is my 20th year. It's hard to believe.
You've had amazing, man. 20 years.
20 years.
So you've had a longer career at this than you played football.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's and I'm still challenged by it. I still really enjoy it. I think that, you know, you were talking about the relationships like that we had in our locker room and that continue. You know, we have a bond, you and I do, and with Dion and all those Emmett and all those guys, all those players that we were with. There's a bond that will be there for the rest of our lives. And I feel that it's been awesome to be in this profession and then get to know these players on a personal level that we cover. And so that part of it has been a lot of fun for me to go beyond just covering their games. But now when I watch these games, I would watch football if I wasn't broadcasting, but it wouldn't be appointment television the way that it is right now. But when I'm watching these games, I find myself having, you know, strong feelings for these players just because I know them personally. And that's kept me engaged and kept the game really fun for me.
You get the stories. You see the journeys more. You know, before we were just competing against the guys in other uniforms.
That's right.
In other, you know what I mean? Now, because you're in the business, you get the stories, man. And I don't mean to take this off, but off track here. But speaking of those stories, Troy, just you and me, man. You know how I feel about you, and you were there for me and one of my lowest points. And I'm gonna tell you something, man. I can't tell you how much I love the Tom Brady, Antonio Brown story.
Yeah,
I can't tell you. You know what I mean? And you look now at like Antonio Brown. He's been perfect. He's been perfect since he's been up, been with Brady and everything. Just the way he's answering things, you know, the way he's looking at. I was like, man, and I said on air, I said this on TV. I said, you know, if Antonio Brown, if the relationship he has with Tom Brady, I hope and pray he sees Tom like I see Troy. Like there's nothing anybody could ever do to make me cross say anything anyway against Troy. He's my boy. He's always be that way. And I hope that they have that relationship. And I see that. And when you see something like that, man, I think it's impressive by Tom. What are your thoughts to that?
Yeah, I think they definitely have that kind of relationship. I know Tom was a big reason as to why he went to New England to begin with. He didn't want him to be released when he was. And I think he's had a big reason as to why he then landed in Tampa. He was living with Tom there when he first signed with Tampa Bay. And Tom, I will say that this goes back many years ago, Mike. We were doing a game in New England, and we had talked to Tom after a Friday practice. As soon as the practice ended, he came in, visited with us. We were there at the facility another 2-3 hours, and it was kind of late. It's now about 6 p.m., and we were all wrapped up. We were about to head back to our hotel, and I needed to go use the restroom, and they said, hey, go use the restroom in the Patriots locker room. And so I walked in there, and Tom was sitting down playing checkers with like three backup offensive players, you know?
Right.
And he was married then, you know, he had his life. And I just thought, wow, that's really cool. And I've always said about Tom is in New England and now in Tampa, there's not a guy that's been in that locker room who doesn't feel that they have a personal relationship with him. And when you're 43 years old and you're as established as he is, that's really hard to do. But it comes naturally for Tom. I think he's one of the best people to ever put on. You know, he's one of the best players, obviously, if not the greatest. But he's one of the best people that's ever played our sport. And it's been really a pleasure to watch him play. And I'm thrilled that he's played as well as he has.
That makes me feel good to hear that, because I know you know him much better than I do. You get to see him up close. You get to see a lot of people up close because of what you do. And I want to turn and talk about some of that. You know, like the Cowboys just hired Dan Quinn. Like, and I don't know a whole lot about Dan Quinn except, you know, what he's done on the football field, the type of person that he is. I really don't know. But I know the Cowboys need somebody that can communicate on that level to those young guys. Tell me what you know about that new defensive coordinator the Cowboys just hired, Dan Quinn.
I've gotten to know Dan pretty well, both when he was in Seattle as a defensive coordinator. That's when I first met him. And then when he went on to become the head coach for the Falcons. And yeah, he's a leader of men, really. He's a sweetheart of a guy. He's as genuine as they come, one of the nicest people. I think that – and he's a really good football coach. So I think it was a good hire. Even though Atlanta's had some of their issues on the defensive side of the ball, I think he'll come in. I think – players will relate to him. I think part of the problems, first of all, I hate that Mike Nolan lost his job. I think some of the things that he was trying to do were good, but ultimately it boils down to, did they perform or did they not? And if they didn't, then the coach is the one who takes the responsibility of that. But I do believe that
that's a hard turn though, Troy, in COVID, in this COVID thing. That was a hard turn, man. That was set up for a tough fall.
I totally agree. And relying on some young players and some key positions and sort of a lot of things that were working against him. A lot of expectations for some of the free agents that they brought in that didn't come together, and they had to end up ultimately releasing. But I think Dan will, like they did with Marinelli and like they did with Chris Richard, I think there was a simplicity to what they did on defense. And there's something to be said for that. Not that you always have to be the better players. Like in Seattle, when Dan was there, they were number one both years. He was defensive coordinator. They were first in the league defensively. But they were just physically better than everybody they played against. Right. That's not typically the case. But as you know, if guys know their assignments, they're just able to play with a lot more confidence and a lot faster. And I think that's what Dan's going to bring to this defense. I don't think they're going to be very complicated, but I think they're going to really be honed in on what their assignments are and then execute it.
One more thing, and I know this is a diversion too here, but what are your thoughts about what happened in Philly with Coach Peterson being let go?
You know, Mike, I reached out to Doug Peterson yesterday when I heard the news, and I'm surprised. What I gathered, and I don't know, I don't have any insight, but what I gathered it came down to was a difference of opinion as to how they were moving forward at the quarterback position is what I sensed. I sensed that, you know, here Jeff Lurie, the owner, has paid a lot of money to Carson Wentz, and they're on the hook with him. They can't get out of that contract, you know, right away. And yet it's my belief that Doug Peterson felt that Jalen Hurts was probably the quarterback going forward. And how does that mesh, you know? And so I just, without having any understanding of what took place in that meeting, I think they said, well, there's a difference of opinion as to how they're going to go forward and correct this past season. I believe it all came down to how they were going to handle Carson Wentz. And that's why Doug Peterson's now looking for a job.
Your thoughts on Carson Wentz, man? And Troy, when I analyze young quarterbacks, I'm coming off your model. I'm always coming off your model because I watched you come in as a young quarterback, and I said, listen, I see talent. I can see talent shoulders down, but you better let me. You better make sure this guy can handle it shoulders up, because he's going. You know, when things don't go well, Joe Burrow. I was like, okay, I like this kid because I saw him have some setbacks. But you see the fight back. He doesn't go on a tank. He fights right back, and he stays in the fight. You know, what are your thoughts about Carson Wentz with all he's gone through in his head? I'm not talking about physical gifts. He has those. I'm talking about what he's going through mentally.
I thought this season in particular that there was a lot to point to as to why they struggled on offense. They had all the injuries up front in the offensive line. Skill players were in and out. Couldn't run the ball at times particularly well. And so all that, I always felt that the weakness of a team ultimately runs through the quarterback, and the quarterback is the one who gets exposed for inefficiencies within a football team. And so when you're not being protected, you're not getting guys open, the quarterback then bears the brunt of those criticisms. But I also felt that as a franchise quarterback, maybe you won't have success as much as you'd like. Maybe you're not going to move the football as well as you'd like, but the franchise quarterback cannot compound the problems. And Carson was compounding the problems with the way that he was not protecting the football and not getting the ball out of his hands and taking sacks. And, you know, he would not give up on a play. And sometimes that's admirable, but when you're getting hit by six guys and you could have gone down on the first hit and you're not going anywhere, you know, there's a time to live to fight another day. And so I think he's been beaten down pretty good because of the struggles around him. And it's going to be a project as to whoever becomes the head coach. I think that they're going to have to build him up and see if they can get him back to where he has the confidence again that he can go out and play at a high level. But it has been a long time, Mike. It wasn't just this year. It's been a long time since I've seen Carson Wentz, you know, really play at the level that he needs to play at, or any quarterback needs to play at.
You said it'd be a tough time for any coach that comes in. I mean, how can he possibly do that? You know the locker room. The locker room is a funny place. Now, you got to bring a coach in, you got both quarterbacks, and then the whole locker room thinks that quarterback should be playing. Whatever coach comes in and inserts the quarterback that they say, what are you doing? He instantly loses credibility. So he just got there and loses team. That's a hard situation. I don't know how they figured that out.
I agree. And a lot of people thought the Eagles were crazy when they drafted Jalen Hurts. I think it really points out that they had their questions as well with Carson going into this season, you know, going back to the draft last year. That's why they took him where they drafted him. But I agree with you. You know that. And you know, there's a lot to be learned in our country based on how athletes do things within their own locker room and where it's on merit. And any coach who comes in, those players know what Jalen Hurts did for this team offensively, and they still have strong feelings towards Carson Wentz as well. But the best player has to be able to have an opportunity to play. And I don't know that you can come in with a preconceived idea as to who's going to be your starter right now with the way that the season ended between those two.
It'd be tough, man. Let's run through these games that we got coming up, man. First of all, well, we had that was a great weekend of football last week.
Yeah.
Great. The stories that were around those games, man. And I thought the most incredible story outside of Cleveland beating Pittsburgh without their head coach was Taylor Heinicke. Did you see? Sure.
Yeah. they almost pulled it off.
Right. Oh, instantly. Everybody now knows his name, man. Yeah. What were your thoughts when you watched this kid play?
He was knowing how hard the position is to play, Mike, or how frustrating it is, and when you don't play well, I always root for these guys to come in and play. We almost had it last week ourselves with John Wolford, who got hurt
in
the game with the Rams. But for Heinicke to come in and play the game and do some of the things that he was able to do, I was really happy for him, and hopefully he's proud of himself and the way that he was able to play. But Washington, as bad as that division was this year, I think Washington's a good story. You know, I mean, I think they can build on this. I think this was good. There was so much to point to with that franchise and say, wow, maybe they've kind of turned a corner. But I'm hoping Alex Smith comes back and play. I sure enjoyed watching him and know what he's endured to get back to this point. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Heinicke's shown enough to where if Alex doesn't come back that he'll be the guy going forward. We'll see.
Or at least get in and give him a battle. And let's see if he can win a team, man. Let's go. And you started with the game. You guys had that Rams game. I'll go through these games, the Saturday games, Rams at Packers. What chance do you really give the Packers of winning that football game in Lambeau?
Oh, I think the Rams. I think because their defense is so good that they'll have a chance. These are two coaches that know each other really well. Matt LaFleur was on McVay's staff a couple years ago before he took the OC job at Tennessee. And so they believe in their offensive philosophies are the same. So the offenses will look very similar when you're watching these two teams play, but the Rams defensively, they can keep them in any game. And I think this is the one game, at least in the NFC, where you'd say this is a home field advantage. I mean, because no fans, it's not the same playing on the road, but for the Rams to go from the West Coast to the frozen tundra, I mean, that is an advantage for Green Bay. It used to be you'd never think about going into Lambeau in the postseason and win a football game, but Michael Vick changed all that years ago, and now teams have been able to do it. I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I definitely think the Rams have a shot.
That'd be interesting to watch, man. Let's go to the other side of the game, the Ravens and Bills. Two things here that sticks out, Troy. Your thoughts on Baltimore first, because you think a quarterback, Lamar Jackson, talent, do you think a quarterback like that will ever be able to win a Super Bowl with that run first mentality?
Well, it hasn't really happened up to this point, but simply there's not many guys with his kind of skills either.
Right.
So, but yeah, I definitely think that they could do it, and eventually it will happen. I used to never think this, Mike. I used to always think that there would always be a place for the pocket passer, and now I'm starting to change my tune. I'm not so sure. I think these dual threats are now what everybody covets. And I think if you have a choice, even if it's not quite as good a passer, you're going to take the guy who can create, you know, with his legs. And so I do believe that Baltimore with that, you know, this as well as I do, after you win a playoff game, that is such a boost in your confidence. And now for him to finally get the playoff victory under his belt, the team in general defense is playing well. It'll be a heck of a matchup. I'm excited about it. And, I think that they've got a chance also.
Troy, I always talk about that's what we've done now. Because of what happens on the back end, with you can't hit a receiver to after he catches the pass, I said now we give up accuracy for mobility. Because accuracy was so – you know, we ran a bang eight. It was about accuracy and timing.
Yep.
I don't care if you can run. I need you to be able to drop back a few steps and let that ball go because it's going to be a timing play. But now that you have, you know, that timing's out of it. Like, you just you got time, come down with the ball when I throw it up. So now they lose. They will let go the accuracy for the
most. You know, I've never heard it said that way, Mike. I think that's a really good observation. It's a good point, because what I see is there's no longer the quarterback being responsible for protecting the receiver. I mean, right, there were times, right, as you know, that. Right. There's times, right, in a game where you just got to fit a ball in knowing you were going to get hit. I knew you were, right, going to get hit, but we had to complete the pass. But otherwise, it's my job to keep you from getting blown up. And, right, and now there's so much protection. These quarterbacks, they don't even worry, and nor do the receivers. They go in there and catch. They extend over the middle. They know they're not going to get hit very, you know, in the head. But, you know, so the game has really changed both in – you were the best at doing it, and it meant something. It certainly meant something to me, and you earned respect around the league because you were willing to go over the middle. Now, when you talk about a receiver going over, it doesn't, right, it's not the same as what, yeah, it once was, you know? Right. So, and these, the quarterbacks who lead these receivers into trouble, and it's the defender who ends up getting penalized for it because he hits the receiver where he shouldn't hit him.
Yeah, and that's how that game has changed. Joy, when I look at these Bills, they remind me a lot of us, yeah, in our younger years. Yep. You know, and we were talking about this on the show the other day. I said, now, what the Bills need to do right now is make sure, because there's so much turnover, people come in. Everybody that comes on this practice field, that comes in, put on this uniform, we do things a certain way. That's how you take a great year and carry it into something. Yeah. Everybody. And I'll tell a story sometimes, like when we were at practice, some, I don't know, maybe it was a receiver, he fell and didn't get back up. Or you threw a ball and he didn't go for the interception. And I remember you saying, that's not how we do things around here. That's not how we do things around here. You know, and it was from that, because we had gone from the 3-13 to 1-15 to turning things around. And it was, we set a way on how we would practice every, yeah, day. And even when I got hurt and I wasn't practicing, and you came to me in the back of the plane, you say, hey, man, I know you're banged up, but I need you at practice. I need you at practice. We have, yeah, a different atmosphere. I just need you to be out there. You, yeah, know, I think that's important for the Bills to do, because they've started something.
Yeah, it's interesting, Mike, that what I worry about this year with the pandemic and so many teams that play games without ever even having a practice during the week. And, right, and there's, I saw where some players have said they've proven that they don't even need to practice.
Yeah, I saw that.
That they can just go play. And I it's a dangerous precedent. You know, I mean, I worry about the state of football if we're not going to put in and invest the time in practice. And, you know, I've always said that the reason that we were as good as what we were is because our best players were our hardest working players at practice, beginning with you. And that's where it all kind of comes together. And so I think the teams are really missing out on a lot of camaraderie, a lot of relationship building when they're not able to go out onto the practice field and develop that bond and that trust in one another. But the Bills, they do remind me a lot of us, you know, a young team, you know, right on the cusp of doing some really great things. And they're a really talented group. They're a fun team to watch. I mean, I find myself, you know, we covered them one Thursday night. I only get to see them once a year, but they are a lot of fun, a lot of energy, a lot of brashness, a lot like us. You know, we were a pretty confident bunch before we'd even really accomplished much. And that's kind of where they are right now.
Yeah, it's fun to watch them. It really is. And boy, I tell you what, it's been Stephon Diggs, the difference he's made with amazing. Josh Allen. It's been incredible to see.
He's that. One of those guys, Mike, that I think for young receivers, there's a few others around the league too, but I think the art of running routes is not where it once was. But Stephon Diggs, man, he still has it. He's, you know, him, Thielen, his counterpart there in Minnesota for so many years, Robert, yeah, Woods, Cooper Kupp, you know, some of these guys that are really exceptional route runners. I mean, I get excited watching it because you just, it takes me back to our days and the emphasis on coming off the ball.
That's Norm.
Oh, it was so it's really good stuff. And in this game that we're going to watch, you mentioned the Rams and Packers. Those are two coaches that believe in a lot of the fundamental stuff like we ran also with Norv.
Yeah, I love Norv. Norv was so great at that, man. He was just get off the ball. What are we waiting for this call? We were racing off that ball, man. Let's get into the route. It was just such good stuff, man. Let's go over to Sundays because that Browns-Chiefs game, a couple of things here, Troy, because I thought the Browns win was such a huge win. And I want you to talk to me about, because I heard you say this before, you know, when you're the first pick in the draft and you're a quarterback, that comes with expectations to win championships. Nobody makes you the first pick in the draft at the quarterback position without right. the expectations of winning championships. Talk to me about the pressures of that and talk to me in Baker Mayfield's form, because he is that and in charge with turning around Cleveland.
Yeah, no, that's I think not only when you're the number one overall pick, but I think when you're a first round pick, these organizations, they don't draft you to win passing titles. They don't draft you to win to go to Pro Bowls. They bring you in because there's an expectation that you're going to help them achieve a Super Bowl championship. And so you feel that. I certainly felt it. I think you've probably drafted the wrong guy if they don't feel it. And, you know, Baker's competitive. I was surprised by that pick. I thought they would go with Sam Darnold when the pick was made, but I've always liked Baker. I think his competitiveness and his brashness rubs off on the team. And as he started to have some success this year, we've seen him kind of mold back into that player, that fiery competitor that we saw of him in college at Oklahoma. And so everyone feeds off that. You know, this is a team. I was on an interview earlier this morning. I think that there's a lot of people who have been through the building there in Cleveland for the last couple of years that have had a hand in getting them to where they are right now. And probably at the top of that list would be their former GM, John Dorsey, who drafted Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. He traded for Odell Beckham. He also then drafted Nick Chubb and, you know, did a lot of things to where he set the table, and now Stefanski and that crew has come in and really given them what they've needed to get them over the top. And they've been fun. When I think of the Cleveland Browns and their success this year, I think of the dog pound and their fans. I mean, they have been wanting something to cheer about for so long, and they've been resilient. And so I'm just thrilled for the city of Cleveland and all those fans. And I wish they were able to go to these games and really celebrate it and enjoy it the way that they would if we weren't in the middle of this pandemic.
It's different with people at the stadium. I miss that. I complain about all the traveling. I'm going to go to another game, but really, you know, now that it's taken away, like, man, I would love to go to a game, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I promise I'll never say anything like that again. I'm getting on the plane going, because it's just fun being there, being in the stadium, being around the people and everything, man. So I'm looking forward to it. Troy, will anybody be able to beat the Chiefs, man? Andy Reid. That's one of my most favorite guys of all in the NFL. Will anybody be able to do anything with what the Chiefs have?
It's hard to imagine. I mean, we've seen them. They're not playing their best football the last week, you know, couple of games. But even when you get them down, they just can score so quickly. I mean, we've all seen it so many times. And Patrick Mahomes and the things that he's able to do and those weapons that – I mean, they're able to run concepts and things within their routes just because of the speed of these receivers that teams just simply aren't able to do. You know, the timing is still pretty good, but I like Kansas City. But if there is a team, I do think that, you know, Buffalo might be that team that could give them some challenges. You know, I mean, it's going to take them not being at their best is what you kind of hope
right,
for.
Right, right, right.
And then if they're not, and you can hang in there, you give yourself a chance. But boy, they are really good and a lot of fun to watch.
Before I let you go, man, talk to me. I'll call it the old man game.
Yeah. The OG.
Breeze and Brady. But now both of those guys, it's been incredible to have those that kind of a career. You know, you look through the numbers, it's 1-2, 1-2 across the board. Brees and Brady, and as you look over at career stats, and I think that's just phenomenal, man. What do you see in this old man game, and how much of a chance do you give Brady the chance at beating the Saints this third time around?
Yeah, they, you know, we had this game week one is how the season opened. And I said then that we could very well be watching the NFC Championship game. It's not that, it's the divisional game. But New Orleans has had their number for the last five games. They've, under Arians, Tampa's lost the last four. But yeah, I like the matchup. I think Tampa is. When Tom Brady got it going and the offense got it going, their defense has been, you know, pretty good all year long, was right after the week nine game against New Orleans when they got throttled. And then since then, they've been playing pretty good. So it's a different Tampa team than New Orleans saw. So I think from that standpoint, they certainly have a chance. But what I think about this game, I think it's such a learning opportunity for young quarterbacks. We talk about how the games kind of change. These two guys, who neither one is really all that mobile, but they don't take sacks. They don't turn the ball over. They understand situational football. They don't take the sack to knock themselves out of field goal range. They know when they need to, you know, kind of force the opportunity down the field. There's just a lot of the mechanics of the position that I think have gotten lost, but not amongst these two guys. So I'm excited about the strategy and how they both play within the game plan of their own offenses to give themselves a chance to win. But it's going to be great. I'm thrilled about it. And never before have I seen a game on paper that looks so evenly matched. I mean, both these teams, neither team really commits a lot of penalties. Neither team turns the ball over a lot. Neither quarterback gets sacked a lot. Both offenses can move the football. Both defenses are good against the run, not giving up big play. I mean, it's just like, okay, well, then who's going to – and like these other games, it's cliche, but I really think at the end of the day, whoever wins the turnover battle, I think is going to be the team that wins, because just looking at it going into the game, I think everything else is just so evenly matched that – as you enter it, a lot of things happen once you get into the game. But as I look at it going into the game, I think that that's going to be the difference in who wins or loses.
For me, it is ME and ML. Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore. I need Mike Evans to man up. Yeah. I need him to man up here. Lattimore is giving him some trouble.
Yeah.
He's giving him some trouble now. And I thought, Troy, I said, okay, now that Antonio Brown's here, that could change some things. Because when you take out Lattimore, that put a hurting on that offense. But now Antonio Brown's coming around. That could change some things for them with Antonio there.
No question.
Lattimore. Yeah, Lattimore has that number. That, for some reason, he has Mike Evans' number.
You know, the last time they played, week nine, that was Antonio Brown's first game with Tampa. So he's much more acclimated into this offense than he was then. And Mike Evans, I thought, for a guy who was banged up going into that game against Washington, on Saturday night, you know, he did some really good things, and they've got a lot of weapons. You know, the guy who then – I used to always say your receiving core is only as good as your third receiver.
Right.
Now, in today's game, it's probably not – it's only as good as your fourth. And their fourth is Scotty Miller, who I think can create some problems too. So, I like some of the things that they have on the offensive side of the ball for Tampa Bay.
All right, before – just on overall quarterbacks here now. We talk Tom Brady. We talk Drew Brees. Tom Brady and Drew Brees, 1 and 2, we talked about that. Tom Brady ultimately is going to be given the GOAT. How important is it for Drew Brees to get at least this second Super Bowl? Because when people are looking at it, they say, well, look at the numbers. But then ultimately they're going to say, look at the titles. How important is that second Super Bowl for Drew
Brees? Well, I think his place – I do feel that Drew Brees' place in history is secure, but – I also know that for a guy who's as good as he is and as much as he's accomplished, he and Sean Payton together in New Orleans have won over 150 games. And yet only one of those wins was for the Super Bowl and to hoist the Lombardi Trophy. And I think that if Drew's career ends and they only have the one Lombardi Trophy to show for it, I think that'll be a huge disappointment for everybody. When you've got that type of a quarterback for that long playing at that level and to not have won more. And we can point to the last couple of years and how they've lost and all those are things are true, but they don't give you any prizes for that. So yeah, I think both Sean and Drew feel a real sense of urgency to do it this year, because I believe that this is going to be Drew's last season.
Mm, that'll be something, man. And it'll be a great way for him to ride off into that sunset with that ring. Troy, thanks for taking the time, man. I don't get a chance to just talk football with you. I'm always watching you, Troy, you know, and I appreciate you doing the work, doing the thing that you do and the way you do it. But let me one last thing. You do know that Tony Romo moved that number significantly in the broadcasting booth. Troy, your deal now, Troy. Will you guys be looking at that number and negotiating?
Yeah. You know,
mind saying yeah to that right away, huh?
The broadcaster's salary cap went up.
I'm sure you'll be talking to Fox about that soon.
Hey, that's good for you, too. Don't kid yourself.
Hey, good for everybody. All ships rise on the right tide, and we appreciate Tony moving that tide. Yeah. That's for sure, man. Thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Got it, brother. I love you, man.
Love you, too, buddy.
Right. See you, man.
I want to thank him again, man, my quarterback, Troy Aikman, for taking the time right there. You're talking about a dude that I've watched make many, many plays, which is a perfect segue because it's time for my playmaker of the week, my super wild card weekend playmaker of the week. And I can't even go into this. I'm not going to lie to you. Without giving love. And usually if you lose a football game, especially right here because it's lose and go home, I don't even mention you. But I will not be true to who I am as a man when I tell you I measure men in distance traveled. If I don't mention the distance traveled by that young kid from Washington, Taylor Heinicke. Oh, my God. You saw Chase Young pointing at his back. Taylor Heinicke. It was incredible. You're matched up with the greatest, the GOAT, Tom Brady. This is a tough situation. You really, he's the emergency quarterback. You sit over there, keep going to school, to watch everything on virtual, and then if we need you, we'll call you. And boy, they needed him. And boy, when they called him, did he show up or what? He went 26 of 44. That young dude had thrown the ball 44 times. 306 yards. He had one touchdown. One interception, and he rushed for another 46 yards, and he took the GOAT Tom Brady and the Buccaneers to the end. They won that game late. He took them all the way to the end. That's a playmaker, man. And distance travel, I got to mention you as a playmaker right here. But I'm giving my top spot to another quarterback. I thought about Lamar Jackson here, but the truth is, I got to give it to Josh Allen. Josh Allen played a great game. I watched him last year in a wild card game against this Texans. And I said, he's maybe a year away. And I was right. It's been a year. And now he's here. He was 26 to 35 for 324 yards. He was insane. Throwing the ball, doing what he needed to do, getting it done. And then he even ran for a touchdown. He threw for two touchdowns, and he ran for another touchdown, 54 yards, and another touchdown. Josh Allen is playing some football, man. And I'm going to tell you something. If he continues having these kinds of games, don't be surprised if we see that matchup between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen plant his flag and say, I want a piece of this crown. And he gets down and win that game. Josh Allen, you are my wild card, super wild card weekend playmaker of the week.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com. Today. That's GEICO.com.